Listen to Jeremiah 11, 19th chapter, text 149. It is said, Krishna Bhakta Nishkamateva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Achanta. The word Shanta means completely peaceful. Unless all one's desires are fulfilled, one cannot be peaceful. Everyone is trying to fulfill his aspirations and desires, be they material or spiritual. Those in the material world are Ashanta, without peace, because they have so many desires to fulfill. The pure devotee, however, is without desire. Anya bilashita shunya. A pure devotee is completely free from all kinds of material desire. Karmis, on the other hand, are simply full of desires because they try to enjoy sense gratification. They are not peaceful in this life, nor the next, during the past, present, or future. Similarly, jnanis are always aspiring after liberation and trying to become one with the Supreme. Yogis are aspiring after many siddhis, powers, anima, logima, prapti, etc. However, a devotee is not at all interested in these things because he is fully dependent on the mercy of Krishna. Krishna is Yogeshwara, the possessor of all mystic powers, siddhis, and he is Atmarama, fully self-satisfied. The yoga siddhis are described in this verse. One can fly in outer space without the aid of a machine, and he can travel at the speed of mind. This means that as soon as a yogi desires to go somewhere within this universe or even beyond this universe, he can do so immediately. One cannot estimate the speed of mind, for within a second the mind can go millions of miles. Sometimes yogis enter into the bodies of other people and act as they desire when their bodies are not working properly. When the body becomes old, a perfect yogi can find a young, able body. Giving up his old body, the yogi can enter into the young body and act as he pleases. Being a plenary expansion of Lord Vasudeva, Lord Rishabhadeva possessed all these mystic yogic powers. But he was satisfied with his devotional love for Krishna, which was evinced by the ecstatic symptoms such as crying, laughing, and shivering. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, fifth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Rishabhadev's Teachings to His Sons. So talking about this particular verse that Srila Prabhupada quotes in the purport, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kam Sakalaya Shanta Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Adiva Shanta. It's a very interesting verse because it says basically that whether one wants bhukti is sense gratification, or mukti, liberation, or powers within this world, siddhi, kam means he has that lust or desire. Sakale ashanta, he's not going to be peaceful. And then Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Adeva Shanta, one who is actually without material desires and wants simply to please Krishna, he's a Krishna Bhakta, then he's really peaceful. Now the reason for that is that no matter what one has other than Krishna consciousness, one will always be hankering for more. One will not be satisfied. Even if one has these mystic powers, I mean, these mystic powers, when I read about them, they're extremely attractive to me. You know, just like the one, I was just reading about this one here in the purport, that if you have an old body, you can enter into a young body. So, you know, we have an old body, it's getting older, and I'm just thinking, you know, let me take over someone else's body so I can enjoy life again. So many things we'd like to do, but, like, anyway, devotional things, obviously. Devotional things, not material things. Not that we want to go hang gliding or any of those other nonsense things. But so many things. So these things are very attractive, but once you have them, you're not satisfied. In fact, of course, as the Gita says, and I've quoted this verse many times, it just increases your desire. It's like throwing gasoline onto the fire, it just increases the fire. So your desire just gets increased the more you have. And that's really the problem with America today. That, I mean, if you look at the statistics, I mean, we're talking about statistics of mental illness, statistics of violence. You know, people were talking about so much about this this school disaster. You know, 26 people killed, 20 kids were killed like this. And then just yesterday, something else happened. You know, there's another gunman somewhere else. There was a statistic that every 2 weeks, something like this happens in America. It's a statistic, on the average. You know, it's a difference between saying every 2 weeks and then on the average every 2 weeks. Because if it was every 2 weeks, you could just schedule, oh, it's the time, the day for it to happen. But sometimes it happens like one day after another, and other times it happens like 3 weeks after 3 weeks. So you take an average, you know. You understand the difference between average and saying every 2 weeks? Because every 2 weeks was me on schedule, like the Lord's incarnations. So, I mean, it's amazing. You just look at the violence, the diseases, you know, lifestyle diseases that people have, the overconsumption, and the greed, the mental illnesses, and everything like that. It's really amazing. And at the same time, I was reading about how some places in India, people are literally starving because they're not getting enough. I mean, I was reading this article, that the government pays money to these corporations in India to provide this nutritional supplement, some sort of a powder or something. I don't know if anyone's read the article. Some sort of a powder. And what happens is that this company, they just like put other things in the powder or whatever. So the powder is actually completely inedible and even the cows won't eat it. And then little children of 5, 4, and you know, 1 or 2 years old are just dying because of malnutrition. I mean, they won't touch the powder, even if they do get the powder. And there's so much corruption like that. So you have this wide disparity in the world of people who are really like suffering. You know, there's not enough water. I mean, in America we have so much. Or in the first world countries, we have so much water that, you know, we wash our pots out, rinse the pots out and everything like that, and it's just amazing. And then you go to India and people are carrying the water on their heads. You know, ladies are carrying the water on their heads. So you think that all, the point I'm making is you think that all these things would just make people happy. And even the statistics about gun violence, you know, America has like at least 5 to 6 times the amount of any other, you know, first world country gun violence and your murders because of guns of any country in the world. And you have, of course, much more than India. You know, people think India is so dangerous, but, you know, there's much more danger in America of being killed by a gun like that. In India, of course, there's robberies and other nice things like that. But still, so you see, the point I'm making is that all this opulence that people have does not really give them happiness. It just makes them more crazy. Nunam pramata kurute vikarna yadindriya pritya aprinoti. This is, of course, what Lord Vrishabhadeva says. Nunam pramata kurute vikarna yadindriya pritya aprinoti. That because the senses or the satisfaction of the senses becomes so important to these people, then they become crazy. You know, crazy in the sense that they become more and more illusioned. And even they become angrier. I mean, that's really the cause of all this. You know, a lot of the violence, I wouldn't say all the violence, but a lot of the violence is the people just so damn frustrated because they see the sense objects dangling in front of them practically 24 hours a day through the media or just in the street or whatever. And they just, some people just can't have them. For one reason or another, you don't have enough money or you, whatever it is. And then so people are just walking around in a state of anger. I mean, people get angry even when someone cuts them off in the car. Can you imagine that? It's hard to imagine, you know, someone gets angry or a deer hits them or something like that. They get angry. So this indicates that they're just really fussy, really wanting something. I mean, just like yesterday, of course, I got angry at my bicycle because the chain wouldn't go on the right way. So that's just frustration because I wanted to do something for Krishna. So anyway, there's transcendental anger. Anger at your bicycle. So anyway, so bhukti mukti siddhi kam sakale shanta. Whereas a pure devotee is experiencing so much happiness that the sense objects become inconsequential, or desire to enjoy the sense objects becomes inconsequential to him, because he's experiencing something on a very deep level. Well, of course, he's experiencing things on the emotional level, because the emotions are actually where we enjoy. Emotions, the mind, and also intelligence. But even that, you know, because he's experiencing everything satisfied on all the different levels. On the emotional level, of course, he has what's being described here in the verse in the purport. He has all these bhavas that he's experiencing. Bhava means like emotion. Of course, we have emotions in the material world are called bhava rog. It means diseased emotions. Like someone in an insane asylum, and of course you can't say that nowadays, in a mental hospital or wherever. They're experiencing diseased emotions or diseased intelligence or whatever. Just like I was in someone's house yesterday. Their mother has Alzheimer's disease. So that's like a diseased intelligence, diseased emotions, and she was screaming and everything like that. So basically that's bhava rog. I mean, we're all experiencing these diseased emotions. But they're transcendental emotions, which are called the bhavas, which Lord Vrishabhadeva is experiencing here. And it's interesting that Lord Vrishabhadeva is God, or an incarnation of God, and still he's experiencing emotions in relationship to God. And I was reading about this, or hearing about this, from the Chaitanya Bhagavat yesterday, how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he first entered the Jagannath Temple, I mean, he experienced what's called one of the Vyabhachari Bhavas. There's 33 Vyabhachari Bhavas, and I'll explain what those Bhavas are in a second. He experienced it to such an extent that he went unconscious for 9 hours. Not just like, you know, a few minutes of feeling a little dizzy like we may feel, if we're lucky. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he fainted in front of the deities. And, of course, the guards, they were ready to beat Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But fortunately, Lord Chaitanya's Yogamaya had arranged that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was there to stop the whole thing, because he recognized the symptoms of ecstasy in a great devotee. So 9 hours without consciousness. Pretty amazing, isn't it? 9 hours. And practically, his breathing was so shallow that practically everyone thought he had left his body. They just had to hold a little piece of cotton in front of the nose and see that there was a little air going back and forth. So this is next. And then when Lord Nityananda saw Lord Jagannath, he ran up to Lord Jagannath to give him a hug. Don't want to do that in the temple. That might be quite dangerous. And he went up to Lord Jagannath, not only to give him a hug, but to take Lord Jagannath's garland and put it on himself. And the guard rushed up to basically to either hit Lord Nityananda or pull him away from Lord Jagannath. And as soon as the guard came within a few inches of Lord Nityananda, he flew back several paces in the air. And then he understood that he had made a mistake by trying to interfere with Lord Nityananda's ecstasy. Of course, later on, the guard apologized to Lord Nityananda, and Lord Nityananda is very merciful like that. So in any case, so the Lord, even Krishna has these devotional, Krishna wants to experience these devotional ecstasies. That's the point. They're so amazing and so, like, all-absorbing And so much that they take your consciousness away from everything else, that, you know, that's natural detachment from this material world. Of course, the Lord is never attached to the material world, but the Lord, but they're so wonderful that even the Lord takes on the guise of his devotee to appreciate these emotions. Isn't it amazing? And we have access to these emotions, unless we commit offenses against Vaishnavas, then you have no access to spiritual emotions, then you just have access to material emotions. So, let me describe what these emotions are. I mean, I've talked about this before in different seminars I've given, but it's good to be reminded of the different types of bhavas. The first one is called a vibhava. That means that which excites you. Just like if you see a peacock feather, like Mukunda, Lord Chaitanya's associate, he was a physician and he was seeing the Muslim governor being fanned with a peacock fan, and he was standing up in the dais with a Muslim governor and he fell off out of ecstasy. And of course he explained to the Muslim governor that he had epilepsy, but in fact even the Muslim knew better, that it was a devotional symptom. So things that remind us of Krishna. That's why it's good to have pictures of Krishna around your house, because it reminds you of Krishna. Just like, you know, I have all these pictures. Actually, all my walls are completely filled with pictures. I have no more space in my house. I just got two more pictures from Ananda the other day of Vrinda Devi. And you just look everywhere. It just reminds you of Krishna. You can't forget. You just have to cover them if you want to forget that Krishna. Yeah, no pictures of Maya, no pictures of my mother or anything on the wall, except for when she comes and visits me. So that's a vibhava, a reminder of Krishna, like the temple, the chakra, a devotee, a prasadam, and so many things. Of course, for a pure devotee, everything reminds him of Krishna because he sees Krishna in everything and everywhere, so everything becomes an impetus for emotions. And of course, amongst the vibhavas, there's a lambana and udipana, which means things that are directly Krishna, like the deities, and things that remind you of Krishna, like a peacock feather. That's an udipana. Things that remind you of Krishna, like a peacock feather, or Tulsi Devi, or Tila, something like that, that remind you of Krishna. Okay, and then after vibhava, you get the subsequent ecstasy, which is called the anubhava. And that's interesting. These are manifestations of ecstasy that you really have control over if you want to control them. They're not uncontrollable ecstasy. It's things like saliva, like coming out of the mouth. Sometimes you don't feel so much ecstasy. Not because you're sick. So it's an intentional action that you do. That's what an anubhava is, an intentional thing that you do in relationship to the vibhava. What is that, intentional? Intentional means you see the deities and you start dancing. Now you could stop if you want. That's intentional. You understand? Or you roll on the ground intentionally. Don't do that. That's why it's called an anubhava. It follows, you see something and then you respond intentionally to that. Just like the example given by Srila Rupa Goswami is that if a mother sees her child, she wants to embrace the child. And she intentionally goes up and embraces the child. She's not forced to embrace the child. She walks up to the child and embraces the child. Gives the child a warm and fuzzy. So, then, after that, there's the sattvika bhavas. And the sattvika bhavas are also involuntary expressions. They result from a vibhava. And they're intense, but they're not, let's say, the highest level of intensity. They're like the hair standing on end, which is a little intense, but it's not going to really destroy Bhagavatam class if your hair stand on end. Or you shiver. Or you cry softly. Don't do it. Sometimes people cry in Bhagavatam class, but not for the right reason. They cry because it's the full moon or something like that. I've seen that happen, you know. Their eyes turn like red, like sausages. Then I just close my eyes when I'm giving class because I don't want to see any of that. So, makes me nervous. Emotional expressions. So, anyway, so it's an unintentional, involuntarily action. That's also part, it's constitutional. In other words, it's always there. The subject of bhavas are always there. Sometimes they manifest, sometimes they're not manifest. You understand? Sattva. It means they come from sattva, or the transcendental mode of goodness. So a devotee's always in the transcendental mode of goodness. So those emotions are always there, but they sometimes come to the surface. It's like things in the water that just rise to the surface from time to time. And then after that, there's the ones that are super aggressive, and they're not always there. They're intermittent. Those are called the vyabhachari bhavas. Vyabhachari bhavas are the ones that just like take you over when you least expect it. Just overwhelm you. They're like waves. They're like a tsunami. Let's give an example. The sattvika bhavas are like the normal waves in the ocean. They're there. And you know how to surf, which is nice. But the vyabhachari bhavas are all of a sudden, you're swimming in the ocean and there's a tsunami because there was an earthquake in Japan. And like a 50-foot wave comes. You ever see that? I've seen pictures of it, I've never seen it in person. 50-foot wave comes and just like, oh no. Just like one time I was in Hawaii and Mayapur, Chandra, took me to this beach called Makapu. I don't know if any of you have been to Hawaii. And he said, you'll really like it here. So I went into the water, and then all of a sudden there was this like 25-foot wave coming. And it pounded me and sent me down, it rubbed me on the ground, because it was also shallow there too. And I got so angry at Mayapur. Of course I escaped. But. So that's like a vyabhachari bhava. Of course that's miserable in the material world. Like Prabhupada called surfers, sufferers. Because they're simply waiting for some promise of enjoyment. They stay out there waiting for the perfect wave, and then they ride the wave, and then what happens afterwards? They're not satisfied. They have to keep trying again, one wave after another. So, anyway, so that's the vyabhachari bhavas. And let's see an example. There's 33 of them. An example of the vyabhachari bhava is when Krishna entered into the Kaliya lake, and he went to chastise the Kaliya serpent, and Yashodamai, she actually wanted to go in to save her little boy. And actually all the residents of Vrindavan wanted to go in to save Krishna, but Balaram saved him. So they're wanting to go in and then fainting right afterwards and becoming completely unconscious. And also Lord Rishabhadev's becoming unconscious and doing other things is actually an indication or a manifestation of vyabhachari bhava. And then the final type of bhava is called stayi bhava. Stayi actually means your emotional rasa. It's your rasa. The taste. It's like taste from a particular rasa or emotion from a particular rasa. Your emotion of maternal affection, your emotion of conjugal affection, your emotion of servitude, friendship, or emotion of just passive adoration. So these are the different types of bhavas. So when these bhavas become more and more intensified, then one reaches prema. And then at prema, you're completely disinterested and there's no opportunity or chance for any anarthas or anything other than Krishna consciousness to enter into your heart. So this is actually what we're trying to accomplish in our Krishna conscious movement. I mean, we want other people to come, but internally we have to develop these emotions. And the way we develop these emotions is by chanting the Lord's holy names, preaching Krishna consciousness, worshiping the deities. This is the goal. Like Narottama Das Thakur prays, Goranga Valite Havi, Pulaka Shavir. He's praying for the Bhavas. Of course, they're not to be artificially, prematurely imitated. It's not that, you know, you say, I'm praying for the Bhavas, you start shaking that. You just may have Parkinson's disease instead of a Bhava. So they're not to be imitated, but we should pray. You know, when, oh, when will that day be mine? Kabhi havi bolo se dinama. When will that day be mine? When chanting the holy name, I feel ecstasy. Or chanting Goranga, I feel the hairs standing on end. And so when we read about Lord Vrishabhadeva doing these things, we can appreciate the extent of detachment that one comes to by experiencing these spiritual emotions. That's how we become detached. Not by some artificial austerity, you know, give up this or give up that. You know, many times we try to tell devotees to give up or eat less, and it never works. Wake up, never works. But if by experiencing emotions, then automatically we give up things of this world. Anyway, so this is what we can learn from this verse in purport. So any questions or comments about the activities of Lord Vrishabhadeva? Actually, you had a lot of questions. I should answer your... If I can understand your questions, I will answer them. Here, we'll read his questions. The recent descriptions of Lord Vrishabhadeva's nature versus the nature of less intelligent common people and the bringing up of a python as a solution to the troubles with the final purport reading, travel for preaching, otherwise settle. Pray, this paraphrased version leads to the same inquiry. I don't understand the question. Vedic version cited states, karma will deliver the identical result despite staying in one place or the other. Thus Vrishabhadeva in self-assurance lay down to receive the results. Well, the point is, Vrishabhadeva didn't have any karma. But he was showing us that simply going here, going there, buying this or buying that is not going to give you more happiness or more results. He was showing that to us, that as Lord Chaitanya states in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Stanis tata shrutikatam tan vanma no vir. And he's actually quoting from Lord Brahma. This is the verse Lord Brahma spoke. That he said, just stay wherever you are. You're not going to become happier by moving around or doing this or going here or going there. But by wherever you are, and just be absorbed in Krishna's name. Stanis tata. Be situated. Shrutikatam. So and hear about Krishna. Somehow or other, you should hear about Krishna 24 hours a day, whatever you're doing, and minimize other types of hearing processes. I mean, obviously we have different services, we have work to do, whatever. But minimize everything else. And as I often say to devotees, take advantage of modern technology to hear about Krishna 24 hours a day. You can't. You can actually keep your, you know, your iPhone or iPod or iMe in mind. With Prabhupada and different books, 24 hours a day, it's very nice. I mean, I have about 3 or 4 hours, other than Bhagavatam class, of hearing every day. And I'm not just like sitting around, just like reading. Like I'm doing my deity worship in the morning with Mike Overnight Sheila, and in the evening I'm cooking for my deities. And I'm listening to Chaitanya. You know, now I'm on the Chaitanya Bhagwat Anshalila, which is really amazing. I didn't like some of the Majalila because that was when Lord Chaitanya left. The end was too intense, isn't it? Lord Chaitanya left Navadvip. I was thinking it's actually nicer to think of Lord Chaitanya as Nimai than Chaitanya. Because Nimai was when he was in... Navadvip, and Chaitanya was there when he left, right? So, And he left his wife and mother, so intense. Anyway, so you hear about these things. What I'm saying is that I'm talking about different emotions that arise. I'm actually demonstrating that. You get all these emotions. Why did he leave? I'm not saying it's a baba, but... So, you hear these things, and it helps you absorb yourself in Krishna. So taking advantage of modern technology, you know, 2 or 3 hours in that, and then I'm going over and reading for Rasa Priya every day, which is another, you know, hour between the chanting and reading. So, you know, without neglecting my duties, I'm actually engaging in 2 or 3 hours outside of the morning program and hearing and chanting. Pretty good, isn't it? So everybody can do that. You know, you're driving a car, you're going to work, you just put on your whatever electronic device you got and listen. We have readings of books, we have so many things that you can listen to and just be absorbed in Krishna Katha 24 hours a day. Anyway, so Lord Vrishabhadeva is showing this, that just you don't have to leave your situation to be Krishna conscious. You don't have to travel halfway around the world. You can just like hear about Krishna, Shuti Gatam, Panvamanavya. And in this way, your mind can be absorbed in Krishna. Okay, that answers one question, I hope. Here is Krishna performing a pastime, yet is always setting exemplary standards. That's what he said. Of course, imitation is not recommended. But as asked in last week's letter, what is applicable to the present day practitioner? What is applicable? You just stay in the same place and just chant. You don't have to get, unless you have preaching activities. You know, if you can preach and help people, then that's a different thing. That's, you know, sannyasi's duty. So much travel, tour, etc., skipping over literally hundreds of thousands of conditioned souls and by moving at neck-break speeds. Hope that's not me. I'm not moving at neck-break speeds. I just drive a bicycle. It doesn't go that fast. So, here's the question. If results are coming due to destiny, karma, why go anywhere or make any endeavor to adjust situations? That's a good question. Yes, we should. Unless we have some service for Krishna, unless we have some preaching mission. For Krishna, anything goes. He can do anything. Qualifications may apply to full-fledged pure devotee sheltering completely under Krishna's divine will. In Krishna's personal force, but for regular. How to recognize in our blend of spiritual material life or materialized spiritual careers that we have Krishna's sanction? Well, you have to. Everyone should have a mentor in Krishna consciousness. I mean, if you're not able to directly talk to Super Soul on your mobile phone, 1-800-SUPERSOUL. If he doesn't answer, he just gives you a message. Then you have to have someone you mentor. You know, mentor. Mentor means we have to have older devotees or senior people or the spiritual masters on the planet, and then ask those questions. You know, do we have Krishna's sanction for traveling all over like an avaduta? Personally, there is only an extremely low level of interest in most external affairs. That's good. Yet not to be useless, a concerted effort is afforded to engage in whatever arrives in the form of service. Great. So when an episode of individual need comes into play, there's a conditioned aversion to investing energy in that direction. Please clarify, preferably in writing. Sorry, I didn't see that part. Yeah, I didn't see that one. Oh my God. You know, at the end it says, please clarify this in writing, and I've already read it in class. I think we just need, I mean, the main thing is we just have to have like spiritual mentorship in our Krishna conscious movement. No man is an island, no devotee is an island. And we have to be ready to take advice. I mean, the problem with when people take a high position is they begin to think they know everything and they're directly in touch with Krishna and they don't have to take advice from anybody. People get very proud, especially like the guru position, because everybody's worshiping you and telling you how you're directly in touch with Krishna and whatever it is. And you begin to think that it's true. And then you can't take advice from anyone anymore, and then you make mistakes. So So that's the point. You have mentorship, spiritual mentorship. We're talking about that in the GBC, of having different devotees be mentors for other members of the GBC. We're probably instituting it this year. So on that nice note, all glories to Shubhavad, Shubhavad.